Welcome to Rapidly Rotating Records, an hour of toe-tapping music from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s with yours truly, Glenn Robison. We've got dance bands, hot bands, sweet bands, show tunes, novelty tunes, blues, jazz, and more on everything from Aeolian to Xenophone and by everyone from Aronson to Zerke. This evening's show is very special. We're celebrating just one birthday this week, that of bandleader, pianist, composer, and music publisher Gene Rodemick, born Sunday, April 13th, 1890, in St. Louis, Missouri. And I'm very proud and happy to have here in the studio Gene's great-grandson, Ray Rodemick. Welcome to the show, Ray.
Hi, thanks for having me here on this wondrous birthday.
Ray and I met through a mutual friend. We haven't actually spoken. We've traded some emails and set this up, and it was quite a trek for him to get out here to Fontana for us to record this, so I appreciate the effort. Your great-grandfather was Eugene Frederick Rodemick, and like I say, he was born April 13th, 1890 in St. Louis. His father was Dr. Henry Rodemick, a dentist who played violin.
Yes, that's what we've read. I don't know much about the legacy because my actual father, he's also named Eugene Rodemick, had a messy divorce when he was a little kid and never actually got to associate with the father's side, which is where Gene Rodemick comes from. So it was kind of a revelation figuring out who he was when I was growing up as a kid. We get random phone calls from people in St. Louis saying that, oh, when I was a little girl or boy, I used to dance to Gene Rodemick's music. And we had no idea who they were talking about, except my father is named Eugene Rodemick. So we're thinking there must be some correlation. Going back in time, we actually realized that Gene Rodemick actually turned out to be a famous bandleader who has influenced most of the ragtime music that came out during that period. And I was quite surprised about that.
So he was a musical prodigy and had a perfect pitch. And he studied piano and classical music, was planning on becoming a concert pianist. As he was studying and went along, he added ragtime and popular tunes to his repertoire. And in 1915, he was playing piano at Sicardi's restaurant in St. Louis.
I actually went to St. Louis about 5 years ago. I had a friend that was a DJ out there, and I was looking around at the St. Louis Walk of Fame, and I guess Gene Rodemick has not quite made it onto that yet, but we're working on that.
Well, that's a shame. Yeah. That's a travesty, actually.
Yes.
He also accompanied Elsie Janus on tours in France in 1917 during World War I.
I also understand that he did lots of radio, too. I think, did he do radio in Europe?
I know later on in the 30s, he did radio. After the war, he went back to St. Louis, and that's where he started fronting his 22-piece band at the Liberty Theater in 1918, and he played for about 6 years at the new Grand Central Theater, which was actually built especially for him, I believe. And they also had a residency at the Statler Hotel in St. Louis.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on in St. Louis back then. An exciting time.
His first recording was Come to the Moon in 1919, and he formed his own music publishing company in 1924. It had offices in St. Louis and New York, so that was a pretty big deal. The band also performed on Mississippi River boats, including the Streckfus Line's JS Deluxe, JS standing for John Streckfus. John Streckfus founded the Acme Packet Company in 1884 in Rock Island, Illinois, and he transported freight and passengers. But when Transcontinental Railroad began impacting the freight business, the boats were kind of converted and outfitted as excursion boats, offering day trips with cabin space having been converted to a large dance floor and room for a bandstand and bands. Number of members of the band went on to form their own bands, which gives you an idea of the quality of musicians that he had in the band. Those included Frank Trumbauer, Benny Kruger, Larry Connolly, who we'll talk about, I'm sure, as we go along, Alistair Wiley, whose Coronado Hotel Orchestra recorded for Brunswick in 1928, and David H. Silverman, who played piano. He recorded for Brunswick in 1923. Gene went to Boston around 1927 and played at the Metropolitan Theater for 3 years. Do you have any idea of what prompted him to go from St. Louis to Boston?
You know, I don't actually. I probably had something to do with money, though, I would assume.
In the early 30s, he moved to New York, and that's where he started on radio on the Manhattan Merry-Go-Round program, which was broadcast on Sunday nights. I don't know if that's the first program he was on, but one of the more famous ones Now, there were other band leaders that appeared on that show as well. And around that time, there in the 30s, is when he was doing soundtracks for Van Buren cartoons. And we'll talk about that a little more later on. Well, you've mentioned a little bit about how you came to know about Gene.
Right, yeah. Well, basically, I grew up in a household, which is a very small family. I just have a mother, a father, a brother, and a sister. And grandparents died when I was young. My actual aunt died when I was really young, too. So we kind of were closed off to the rest of the Rotomix in the world. And apparently there is a lot of Rotomix in St. Louis or in the Missouri area. And there's actually a town in, I think it's Illinois, called Rotomix. And I looked back and it's actually named after my family. Nothing to do with Gene Rotomix, but I guess that's where the hub of the Rotomix are. I don't know how far back you have to go to find the actual relationship between them and us, but there is a relationship probably back in the 1800s. So we were kind of out here in LA by ourselves. And like I told you earlier, we got phone calls and we got, there was no email back then, but you know, we get letters in the mail of, oh, I'm a member of the Gene Rotomix fan club and this and that. And it was really strange because you don't have the internet. You can't just go online in the 1980s and type in Gene Rotomix and find out who he is. So it was quite a mystery. And my father, he's a mathematician and works for JPL NASA. And so he's kind of a quiet guy, never really, very introverted. So he never really talked about his past and what he knew. We had to pry out of him. So it, like I said before, it was always this anomaly, this mystery of who this Gene Rotomix person was. So it wasn't until I actually went to UCLA and I was a student there that I actually started looking through the libraries there, and they were starting to put things on computers. And I'm one day for fun, because I'm also an engineer, so that's where I got my degree, but I have a huge background in music. And when I was in school, I did all the choir, and I played the piano, and I played the guitar, and I was in a band. So I had these two driving forces, music and math, which actually are very intertwined if you write music. So I would study in the engineering, I'd do my engineering work in the music library. So when I was bored during breaks, I'd type in Rotomix in the card catalogs or in the systems. And I was really surprised to find floods and floods of Rotomix come up. And it turns out that they have all his original sheet music there in the archives at the UCLA library. So that was quite exciting. So I started photocopying all the music and in turn started playing it and realizing that this music was hard to play. He was really good. I've been playing piano since I was probably five, and I couldn't play some of the stuff that he was writing. And he and his partner Larry. So from there, I've always been a music buff as far as the music charts. And when I was a kid, I used to do weekly countdown shows from my bedroom. And hey, here's the number one song in America. So I get these books by Joel Whitburn, and they're the Billboard pop hits. So you can look up what artist had what number one and what year. And there was this book that I found at Barnes & Noble that is called the Pop Memories Book. And it's basically my Bibles. When I open them up, I memorize every page of these books. So I found this 1890 to 1954 Pop Memories book, and I opened it up, and I never in a million years would I ever think that my last name would be in there. And I flipped through, and there's Gene Rotomix Orchestra, had two top 10 hits in the 1920s. And I was just blown away that this legacy of me being so, you know, I had this dream. One day I want to have a top 10 hit, and one day this and that. And I opened the book, and there is Gene Rotomix with his two hits. So it was quite a revelation. And when I told my father, he had no idea. He had no idea that really? His grandfather had these top 10 hits, and I had to basically school him about how big Gene Rotomix actually was in the day.
So I can see it would be exciting seeing the names there.
Yeah.
What was your first introduction to the actual music?
Well, what I did is, this is probably when I was going to UCLA in the late 90s. So I went on eBay, and I actually typed his name in there also. Once again, lots and lots of Rotomix came up, and it was all his 78s. So I went on to eBay and actually bought maybe 15, 20, 30 78s and took them home. And I was actually able to play some of them on an old 78 machine. It was really exciting to be able to listen to the music and kind of put myself back in the day. And then I, you know, I went online and I found these CDs from the Smithsonian. It's Gene Roddenberry Greatest Hits. It was just like, every time I took a step, I was like, you're kidding me. There's a Greatest Hits for Gene Roddenberry, a 4-disc series, which I guess you even have too.
I have, yeah. So, I've had that for a long time, actually.
So once you have the music on CD, it's you know, putting the record on was a big ordeal, but popping the CD in. And now when you go to YouTube now, you can type his name in and you can hear all his, you can see actually, it's really funny. You can see people putting the needle on the records and you can, and they'll play it for you. So it's quite interesting.
All of the, most all the Van Buren cartoons are on there as well.
I have a funny story about that. And when we get to that,
I'm prepared to play part of the soundtrack from one of the cartoons.
Oh, okay.
So maybe we'll do that a little later.
Okay, great.
Let's actually listen to some music here.
Let's do
How's
it.
How's that? You actually requested that, this first record be on the playlist. And the name of it is Margie.
That's correct.
Why did you want to include that one
well,
in particular?
He had two top 10 hits, as I said, on what, I guess there was no real Billboard chart back then, but what Billboard uses to make the music charts from that era. And one of them was Margie. It went to number 7 on the, in quote, pop charts back then. And just to me, as I said, if a song goes top 10, It's part of me. It's because I'm a DJ. We'll get into what I do later, but I'm a DJ and I worked in radio for 12 years. So I've always been about playing the hits and it's really impressive to me when someone can have a top 10 hit. And to have two of his songs be there was just amazing. One of them was Margie.
All right. Well, let's hear that top 10 1921 hit.
Thank you.
Well, there you have Gene Rodemick and his orchestra in around January of 1921, and Margie. That was composed by Con Conrad and J. Russell Robinson, Russell with only one L, and they composed that in 1920 when Robinson was actually with the original Dixieland Jazz Band, and the ODJB actually first recorded Margie. That was Con Conrad's first hit, and he also wrote The Breakaway, You Call It Madness, But I Call It Love, Barney Google, and Ma, He's Making Eyes at Me. And any of those ring a bell?
No, I love those titles, though. That's great.
J. Russell Robinson wrote Is I in Love, I Is, Aggravatin' Papa, that Shanghai melody, which is not to be confused with Shanghai Shuffle, which we'll hear in a little bit. And Margie was also recorded by Bix and his gang, Red Nichols, Joseph Necht's Waldorf Astoria Orchestra, and others. Now, those were all instrumentals, but there are words which were written by Benny Davis, and Margie was actually inspired by Eddie Cantor's five-year-old daughter, Marjorie. That's where the name came from. Eddie Cantor recorded it, and it was interpolated into Cantor's 1921 Broadway show, The Midnight Rounders. Interpolated meaning that it wasn't actually written for the show, but they just included it.
That's great. I didn't even know all that stuff. That's amazing.
Another tune that you wanted to include is Wolverine Blues. So was there a particular reason you wanted to hear
that? Well, he had the two top 10 hits, and that was the second one. 1923, I believe, was the year that one was released on Brunswick Records.
June 23rd, 1923 was when that was recorded, probably released several months after that. A lot of these, we just have approximate dates, but that one has an actual recording date. Let's hear Wolverine Blues. Thank you. Wolverine Blues, Gene Rodemick and his orchestra from June 23rd, 1923. Wolverine Blues was written by Ferdinand Jelly Roll Morton, and the words were written by Benjamin Franklin Reb Spikes and his older brother John Curry Spikes. Reb was short for Rebel, which was a childhood nickname. The Spikes brothers also wrote Someday Sweetheart in 1919, and Reb was billed as the world's greatest saxophonist while he was with the So Different Jazz Band in San Francisco in 1914. Wolverine Blues was first recorded by the New Orleans Rhythm Kings, and it was also recorded by Jelly Roll Morton a month after Gene Rodemick recorded his version. It was also recorded by Frank Westfall and his orchestra, Benny Goodman, Earl Hines, the Benson Orchestra, Larry Clinton, Bob Crosby, Jack Teagarden, and Louis Armstrong.
It's interesting to note, too, that I was looking in the book here that Jelly Roll's version only went to number 19. So Gene Rodemick was able to get a higher chart position than the writer, but I guess that's the way it happened back then.
Yeah. The Wolverine Orchestra was commonly referred to as just the Wolverines, and Bick Spiderbeck joined them in 1924. And that band took their name from the song Wolverine Blues, which they played quite often.
This is KISL-FM 88.7 Avalon, and you're listening to Glenn Robison's Rapidly Rotating Records, toe-tapping music from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s.
Okay, our next record here is kind of interesting because this one doesn't appear in any printed discographies or any publications. You won't find it in your Whitburn book there. It's I Never Knew I Could Love Anybody Like I'm Loving You. And the reason it doesn't appear is that it was a Brunswick test pressing, which was never issued. We have the test pressing.
Unreleased music.
Yes.
Exciting.
Which we're going to hear right now. Thank you. I Never Knew, Gene Rodemix Orchestra from January of 1921. That's actually from the same session as Margie, the first record we heard. That was an unissued test pressing. That record was actually found on eBay by Bob Lang, whose wife was Hope Lang, and she was Larry Connolly's daughter.
Gene. And I've actually heard of Bob Lang. I don't know, that name rings a bell. I think he was one of the people that contacted my father. Is he around St. Louis area?
I don't know where he's from,
actually. That name rings a bell, so I'm just letting you know that he definitely, he's a big Gene Rodemix guy.
Well, he found that record on eBay.
Thanks, Bob. That's amazing.
That provides a nice segue into the next segment, which I've got several records here of compositions by Gene Rodemix and Larry Connolly. Larry Connolly joined Gene Rodemix's band in 1923, and he was trombonist, but he was also a composer. His most famous composition is A Cottage for Sale, but he didn't write that with Gene. He wrote A Cottage for Sale with Willard Robison. So I've got three records here of compositions by Gene and Larry. The first is Shanghai Shuffle. This is from October 21st, 1924. Shanghai Shuffle, Gene Rodemix Orchestra from October 21st, 1924. That was written by Gene Rodemix and Larry Connolly, and that was Larry Connolly playing the trombone in that recording. Shanghai Shuffle was also recorded by Sam Wooding, Bunny Berrigan, George Wormack, and...
And I'm holding in my hand Fletcher Henderson's CD, 1924 to 1927, and Louis Armstrong was actually on the recording for Shanghai Shuffle on that one.
Yes.
So I found this CD at Tower Records, once again on my hunt, and just picked it up one day, and there it is, Rodemix Connolly, Shanghai Shuffle on Fletcher Henderson's CD. So that was quite exciting for me.
Yeah. Another of Gene and Larry's compositions is One Stolen Kiss. And you actually brought the brought a copy of the sheet music to that.
I did. This was one of the music that I actually found at the UCLA Library. They have a bunch of the sheet music there, and I was able to photocopy it. You know, don't tell anybody.
No.
But I was able to play it on the piano. Not as good as Gene Rodemick, but yeah, it's a. Here's the cover of it. It's very 1920s.
Very colorful.
Yes.
Let's hear One Stolen Kiss. One Stolen Kiss, Gene Rodemick's orchestra from January 19th, 1925. You got to love that slide whistle in there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I've got another Rodemick Connolly composition. They wrote Easy Melody, but they never recorded it for some reason. I believe they recorded most all of the other ones that they wrote together. There are several recordings of Easy Melody. The one I chose is by Charlie Strait's Rendezvous Orchestra. And this is recorded in Chicago in December of 1923. And on the label of that record, Gene's name is misspelled. It's spelled with a K instead of an H.
Hey, I get that all the time, too.
Really?
People don't know how to pronounce my last name.
Rodemich, I would guess.
I get Rodemich a lot. Mm-hmm. And then when they hear it, they write with a CK. So, yeah.
Well, the people at Paramount, who put out that record, made that same mistake. Easy Melody was also recorded by the Benson Orchestra, the California Ramblers, the Ambassadors, and Billy Jones. There's actually more of a connection between Charlie Strait and Gene Rodemick than just Charlie's orchestra recording Easy Melody. Gene and Charlie recorded at least one Imperial Song Record piano roll together as duo pianists. That tune was Indianola and was recorded in 1918. Frank H. Warren wrote the words, and Stephen R. Henry and D. Onivas composed the tune. And longtime listeners to this show know that D. Onivas was the pseudonym for Domenico Savino, which is Onivas spelled backwards. And you can hear that piano roll on YouTube. Anyway, here is Easy Melody with Charlie Strait's Rendezvous Orchestra. Easy Melody, Charlie Strait's Rendezvous Orchestra. I almost said Gene Rodemick's Orchestra, but he didn't record this. Charlie Strait's Rendezvous Orchestra, recording in Chicago in December of 1923. Easy Melody, written by Gene Rodemick and Larry Connolly.
Our part to keep alive the music of the 1920s and 30s. This is Rapidly Rotating Records. Sunday evenings at 6 on KISL-FM 88.7 Avalon and available anytime on demand online at rapidlyrotatingrecords.com.
For this next segment, Gene also wrote music without Larry Connolly. I've got a couple of those records. The first is a tune called Twilight, and that was written with Ed Storman, who was the banjo player in the band. Ed Storman also wrote a tune called Soothing, but he wrote that with Ted Fiorito. I didn't look that up. I don't know if they recorded that. I'll have to look for that and play that on a subsequent show. But here is Twilight by Gene Rodemick's Orchestra, written by Gene and Ed Storman, who's the banjo player. Listen for that in this recording from June 10th, 1924. Thank you. Gene Rodemick's Orchestra, June 10th, 1924, and Twilight, written by Gene Rodemick and Ed Storman. When you first heard a Gene Rodemick record, you first heard one of those recordings from the early 20s, what was your reaction? I mean, did you think this is really old, weird stuff, or did it
No, I actually, I loved it, because when I was a kid, I grew up watching Three Stooges and Laurel and Hardy, and it kind of reminded me of the music I heard Laurel and Hardy in the shorts they did. So it was so great to hear that, because no one makes music like that, at least today. It's music is so commercial and so overproduced, and back then it just felt simpler. It's happy, it's fun, it's creative. And it, just to know that I'm related to someone that did that kind of music and had that kind of success made me feel really good.
Another tune that Gene wrote without Larry Connolly was Fancies. And he wrote this with Herbert Spencer. Herbert Spencer also wrote There's Egypt in Your Dreamy Eyes in 1917, which had lyrics by Fleeta Jan Brown. Gene's not credited on the sheet music, but he is on the record, which I'm going to play, which was recorded around October, November of 1921. There's also a 1906 version of Fancies with the music and lyrics by Fleeta Jan Brown. So this is Fancies, Gene Rodemick, in November of 1921. That's a fun tune. That's Fancies from around October, November 1921, Gene Rodemick's Orchestra. And Fancies was written by Gene and Herbert Spencer. Most of Gene's records are instrumentals, but you were asking me if...
I was wondering. I love all what I'm hearing so far, but did he do anything with vocals?
Well, actually, the next record I was planning on playing is a vocal. It's Al Jolson with Gene Rodemake's orchestra backing Al Jolson. So,
oh, that's big time.
Yeah. So this is a tune called Lazy, which was written by Irving Berlin. And this was used in the soundtrack to the HBO series Boardwalk Empire. This recording is from March 13th, 1924, and this charted number 4 in June of 1924, if you look that up in your...
I'm going to do that right now.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what my notes say. Lazy was also recorded by Blossom Seeley, Paul Whiteman, and the Brock Sisters, and it was sung by Bing Crosby in the 1942 picture Holiday Inn. So here's Al Jolson.
Every time I see a puppy on a summer's day, a puppy dog at play, my heart is filled with envy. That's why I'm in such a hurry to pass the time away. Like the pup, I'm all fed up, and though it's wrong to be, I long to be lazy. I wanna be lazy. I'm longing to lay in the sun with no work to be done under that awning they call the sky, stretching and yawning, and let the world go drifting by. I wanna peep through the deep tangled wild wood, counting sheep till I sleep like a child would, with a great big valise full of books to read, where it's peaceful while I'm killing time being lazy. Lazy, I wanna be lazy. I'm longing to lay in the sun with no work to be done under that awning they call the sky, stretching and yawning, and let the world go drifting by. I want to peep through the deep tangled wild wood, counting sheep till I sleep like a child would, with a great big valise full of books to read, where it's peaceful while I'm killing time being lazy.
The world's greatest entertainer, according to Al Jolson. Al Jolson and Lazy. That was Gene Rodemake's orchestra backing Al on that recording from June of 1924.
And I did not know about that. Thank you so much for introducing me to that.
You're welcome.
We all know who Al Jolson is. I picked up the book and flipped through, and I did discover that it did go to number 4. You were correct about that. And apparently there was another track, too, that Gene Rodemake accompanied. My Papa Doesn't Two Time No Time. I guess that was the B-side to Lazy. So, and it actually has Gene Rodemake's name here in my book. So thank you for pointing that out to me.
You're quite welcome. Now, there were some Rodemake and Connolly compositions which other bands recorded. Not very many, but I've got a couple here. One is When Dreams Come True. Now, Gene recorded that on November 19th of 1923. And When Dreams Come True is not to be confused with When My Dreams Come True, or If Dreams Come True, or Why Don't My Dreams Come True, which was written in 1923 by J. Lester Habercorn. That's a cool name, J. Lester Habercorn. There was also a When Dreams Come True written by Philip Bartholomew, Roy Webb, and Silvio Hine for the 1913 Broadway show of the same name. There was also a 1913 Mack Sennett comedy of the same name, which starred Fatty Arbuckle. This recording is by Michael Gusakoff, and it's a violin solo with Nathaniel Shilkret, who we refer to on this show usually as Nat Shilkret. He's doing the piano accompaniment on this Victor recording from October 17th of 1924. Here's Michael Gusakoff and When Dreams Come True, written by Gene Rodemick and Larry Connolly. Well, that's quite a different rendition of When Dreams Come True from Gene's recording. That was Michael Gusakoff with a violin solo with Nat Shilkret providing the piano accompaniment from October 17th, 1924. Another of Gene and Larry's compositions was Tijuana, and that was recorded by lots of other bands. The recording I've chosen is by the Wolverine Orchestra, and this is from October 8th, 1924, and you've got Big Spider Beck on this recording. Tijuana was also recorded by Jelly Roll Morton as a piano solo, Smith Ballou, Bud Freeman, Buddy Clark, and much more recently by Ry Cooder. So here's the Wolverine Orchestra in 1924 and Gene Rodemick and Larry Connolly's composition, Tijuana. The Wolverine Orchestra, October 8th, 1924, in Tijuana. This is a special edition of Rapidly Rotating Records celebrating the birthday of Gene Rodemick. And here in the studio, we have Gene's great-grandson, Ray Rodemick. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do, Ray?
Okay. Well, as I told you earlier, I went to UCLA for engineering, but I've always had this love for music. I started collecting records and cassette singles in the late 80s. And as I told you, I'm huge on the charts. So I would go down and pick up Billboard magazine every Saturday or Sunday morning, whatever day it came out. It was before you could read it online. I had to rush down to the magazine store and I would see what's top 10 this week. And I'd go out to Tower Records and buy all the cassette singles or when they had CD singles, go home, put in my collection and do weekly top 10 shows with all my friends. And I'd force my little brother to sit at home and hear what the number one song was. And He to this day, he says that he appreciated it because it broadened his horizons. But back then, he could not stand listening to the top 10 each week. But ever since then, I've been kept collecting music. And now I have about 25,000 CDs, all in alphabetical order. And I still, to this day, collect the top 10 hits. But I've expanded my collection to music from Europe now. So, but that's been my constant battle, is that I had this mathematical background, which is like my father. But I always felt this music in me. I've always wanted to play music. I've always wanted to sing. I've always wanted to be involved with music, produce music. And I never really knew where that came from because neither of my parents were really musical people. And my brother, he's a sports guy. So this probably explains a little bit of that, the Gene Rodemick legacy and the fact that he was so into music. So I ended up working at UCLA at the college radio station, KLA. I was on the air there and actually got a job at KBIG 104, which was a radio station in Los Angeles here. And I did a show there for about 10 years. And now I'm actually a DJ in nightclubs in Hollywood. So I produce and DJ three or four club nights a week. That's why I ended up coming out a little late today, because I was up till 4 a.m. last night. But that's the entertainment business for you. I have a degree in electrical engineering, but I actually never had a job in engineering. I make all my money playing and performing music now. So it's
what you love.
Yeah, it's I would never ask it to be anything different than that.
Now, Gene was a pianist, and this next recording I chose because it really shows off his talent as a pianist. Do you play piano?
I do. I've been playing piano since I was probably 5. Piano is my specialty. I love piano.
Well, this song is called 10th Interval Rag, and this recording is from February 21st of 1924. It was written by Harry Ruby, which was half of the great songwriting team with lyricist Bert Kalmar. They brought us So Long, Oolong, How Long You Gonna Be Gone, I Wanna Be Loved By You, and Three Little Words, which was also the title of the 1950 biopic, which starred Fred Astaire and Red Skelton. Harry Ruby also brought us on his own When Ragtime Rufus Rags the Humoresque, and What'll We Do Saturday Night When the Town Goes Dry. Here's 10th Interval Rag. There we had 10th Interval Rag, and a good display of Gene Rodemick's piano talent there. Think you could play that, Ray?
Not quite yet. I might need a little time on that one.
Okay.
I'll get back to you, though.
The next record I have here is Gene Rodemick's orchestra in February 17th of 1925. This is a tune called Everybody Loves My Baby. This was written by Jack Palmer with lyrics by Spencer Williams. And Spencer Williams also brought us I Found a New Baby. This song was introduced by Clarence Williams' Blue Five with Louis Armstrong, and it was also recorded by Ruth Etting, Fats Waller, Eileen Stanley, George Olson and his music, and Earl Hines. So here's Gene Rodemick's orchestra and Everybody Loves My Baby. That's one of those recordings that has what I call an unresolved ending. It's kind of a minor chord, and it just ends, and you're not expecting it to end.
Yeah, we need part two, the sequel.
That was Everybody Loves My Baby, Gene Rodemick's orchestra, February 17th, 1925. This next record I have here, I selected because there are actually two pianists on here. The song is Mobile Blues, Gene Rodemick's orchestra, February 21st, 1924. And the second pianist on here is Alistair Wiley, who went on to form his own band. Gene and Alistair had four issued sides as a duo from a December 1922 session. This has an interesting effect in it. There's some scatting in this record, and there's a lot of doo-wack-a-doo references in it as well. This comes from the same session as 10th Interval Rag, and here is Mobile Blues.
Thank you.
Mobile Blues, Mobile Blues, or Mobile Blues, I don't know, take your pick, Gene Rodemick's Orchestra in February of 1924.
Have a particular song or artist you'd like to hear on Rapidly Rotating Records? Well, you can send your requests and your comments about the show by email to glenn@rapidlyrotatingrecords.com or send cards or letters to Post Office Box 145, Claremont, California, 91711. That's Glenn, G-L-E-N-N, at rapidlyrotatingrecords.com or Post Office Box 145, Claremont, California, 91711.
To commemorate all the rain we've had recently this week, I thought I'd play April Showers. This is Gene Rodemick's orchestra recording in St. Louis in November of 1921. April Showers was composed by Louis Silvers with lyrics by Buddy DeSilva, and it was, of course, a huge hit for Al Jolson. Jolson introduced it in his Broadway show Bombo, and April Showers was also recorded by the California Ramblers, Sam Lannon, Abe Lyman, Mike Markell, Harry Reederman, Ben Selvin, Paul Whiteman, and Rudy Weedoft. Here's April Showers. April Showers from November of 1921. So that's all of the the records that I had picked out, but that's not all of the music that we're going to hear, because Gene did what was called synchronization with cartoons that were produced by the Van Buren Corporation in the early 30s. Now, producer Emma D. J. Van Buren formed the Aesop's Fable Studio with Paul Terry, and they released their first animated cartoons in 1928. When Terry left to form his own studio, Terry Toons, it became the Van Buren Studio, and their main characters were Tom and Jerry. Tell us a little bit about Van Buren and the cartoons, Ray.
Well, what I have here, the most famous one, I guess, from there would be the Tom and Jerry cartoons. That's not to be confused with the Cat and the Mouse. I have a picture of them here. They kind of look like this one guy is blonde, and another one is black-haired, and they're just two kind of goofy-looking looking kid guys, and they were called Tom and Jerry, and he did the music for that. And when I was at one of my nightclub events, this is how this another realization came about. I would come into the Avalon Hollywood on Thursday nights and set up my equipment, and they had always testing things out on the projection screens there. And for a period of about a month, they were showing these old black and white cartoons up on the screens. And I always thought it was funny because they were really goofy looking. And one day, literally after a month after coming into the club, I looked up at the screen and I saw the name Rodimick up on the screens. And I literally freaked out because I thought, wait a minute, this is too much of a coincidence. Because I don't even use my real last name when I'm DJing. I have a stage name, so they would never know that I'm a Rodimick. But these tech guys were just randomly playing these Tom and Jerry cartoons up on the screen that my great-grandfather had done the synchronization for. And that was another epiphany. I just could not, that show just goes to show what an impact Gene Roddenberry really had on even today's world. These tech guys are in their 30s and they're kind of geeky and they're watching these old shows. So I went up and told them, and I don't think they kind of got it because it's too much of a coincidence. But yeah, so that was just sort of my revelation as to this whole thing with Gene. And
he also wrote original music for the 1932 documentary film Bring 'Em Back Alive, which was also produced by Emma D. J. Van Buren. It was about an expedition in the Malayan jungle, which was led by Frank Buck, capturing wild animals of all sorts.
We were talking earlier about how he died so young.
Yes, he was just 43.
Yeah,
it was a real shame.
And this was all these cartoons that he was working on in the studios. That was all stuff that he was doing sort of near the end, and I just wonder what would have happened if he had lived a normal life. So it's just interesting to think about that too. He died 3 years after my dad was born, so my dad never even had a chance to even meet him, or even if they had been in the same room together, they wouldn't have even known each other. He was too young.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But we have some recordings, and I have the soundtrack here from a 1933 Van Buren cartoon. Which the title is Croon Crazy, and this stars a character called Cubby Bear. This was Van Buren's attempt to duplicate the success of Walt Disney's Mickey Mouse. All of the studios at that time were trying to come up with their own Mickey Mouse character, or at least one that would be as successful as Mickey Mouse. So in this cartoon, Cubby Bear is the host of a live radio show, but all of his guests that are scheduled cancel at the last minute. But as he says, the show must go on, so he winds up impersonating all of these people, and they were celebrities of the time. So you've got Laurel and Hardy and Mae West and Al Jolson and a Paul Whiteman parody in there. And this is edited down, so this is a portion of the soundtrack from Croon Crazy with synchronization by Gene Rodimick.
Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, the McHangnail Cuticle Company presents Cubby Bear.
I can prune.
And his radio review, starring Saul Reitman, Kitty Schmidt, and Hal Jolson.
Prunes for you. I can spoon beneath the moon, but I'd rather spoon with you. Won't you?
Reitman sends a telegram, says he can't appear, and Kitty Schmidt is mountain climbing, she will not be here. Jolson broke his kneecap, he can't sing a note, and I got laryngitis, so I guess you're the goat. But the show must go on!
And I'd rather prune to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, when you hear the musical note, it will be exactly 12 o'clock.
The
Ladies and gentlemen, Saul Reitman.
Her boy, her pride and joy, my mammy. I'm gonna walk the track till I get back to
mammy. I'm the gal they're talking about, and here's the reason for it all. I haven't got an all. But what I've got a lot of.
Come up and see me sometime.
This program is coming to you through the courtesy of the McCann Nail Cuticle Company.
There you have some really intricate orchestration and some top-notch musicianship on the soundtrack from Croon Crazy, a Van Buren cartoon from 1933 with the synchronization by Gene Rodemick.
I have to see that. They're trying to envision what was going on in that. It was very intricate.
That's available on YouTube, okay. So you can check that out. Probably just doing a YouTube search on Croon Crazy. I want to thank you for being on the show and giving us your background and your insights into your great-grandfather and his career.
You're welcome. I've definitely learned a lot today. Every day that I learn more about Gene Rodemick, I'm more impressed by what he's done and what he could have done. So, and I just found out today that his music is even on iTunes. I didn't realize.
Yeah,
When I go home, I'm going to find all the songs on iTunes and download them. That's great.
There's about 6 or 7, I think.
That's great.
Thanks again for coming out and being on the show. It was great to meet you, and maybe we can do this again sometime.
Definitely, definitely. And happy birthday, Gene Rodemick.
Absolutely. Happy birthday, Gene. Thanks, Ray. I'm Glenn Robison, and you've been listening to a special edition of Rapidly Rotating Records, celebrating the birthday of Gene Rodemick with my special guest, Gene's great-grandson, Ray Rodemick. I hope you'll click in or tune in again next week, and as always, I thank you for your very kind attention. Thank you.